I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. Our first time getting a chance to check in with you here in 2016. Les, Happy New Year. I hope you spent it trying to stay as warm as possible, because around here it was really nice and warm up until New Year's. Then it got ridiculously cold.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Happy New Year to you too, Vic, and to those listening. You know what? The crazy thing is, this past Tuesday, when I was in the morning, I was talking about temperature variations. This past Tuesday, I turned the news on or whatever it was at about 7 a.m., and it was 15 degrees here. The crazy thing about that, a week before that on Tuesday, it was 55 degrees warmer than that. Now, so we've had some cold weather. Today, Friday, is supposed to be 50 degrees, and and then rain all day for the Bengals Steelers game tomorrow night here in Cincinnati. They're supposed to have rain all day, but then I guess temperature going to drop off the middle of next week. They're telling us, and you know, it's like, what kind of drugs is Mother Nature on? I don't even have a clue. Is she tripping on acid or what? I don't even know. You know, the one thing talking about weather, the way that El Nino thing has hit California. Yeah. I said to somebody the other day, thank God we're not running that tournament out there this year.
Oof.
Yeah, I feel bad for all the people that have been, you know, banged with this weather, and it's a shame, you know. It's been crazy every place, you know. And I guess I heard on ESPN yesterday that the Vikings game in Minneapolis this weekend will be at zero temperature.
Yeah, they're talking about minus 20 to minus 30 degree wind chill for that game.
Well, you know, the San Diego Bengals playoff game here was the coldest on record at one time. That was like 20 below or the wind chill factor or something. I obviously wasn't there, didn't plan to go, but, yeah, this could beat that. And I'm thinking, okay, you smart people up there in Minnesota, you got rid of the dome and you're going back outdoors. But I understand now that the Vikings are telling people there's some place near the stadium, I guess, that's opening up so you can go in there and stay warm, but they're talking about for tailgating, there's free coffee, courtesy of the Vikings and so forth and so on, you know. But I don't know. I don't know what I want to watch to sit outside in 20 below temperatures. Do you?
No, I was very surprised when the Vikings revealed their plans to, and, you know, they're playing in University of Minnesota Stadium while their stadium's being built. But
yeah,
surprised that they're going to go back into an open-air thing after being in the Metrodome for so many years. And was really surprised, although I guess it was financial considerations as much as anything else, that when the Twins built their ballpark, they decided to leave the dome thing behind. I couldn't get that one at all.
Yeah, I don't understand. You know, I really don't. But, a lot of people think, well, this gives the Vikings an edge maybe. Probably a lot of those guys never played in 20 below zero weather either.
You know what? Nobody likes to be cold.
Yeah. I heard Steve Young on Pardon the Interruption the other day saying that they were talking about this weather. And he said, you know, I used to slip the ball boy a couple 20s and say, listen, you hug that before you send those balls in, you hug them close to your body, put them under your shirt, you know, because he's saying, you know, because the ball will freeze. Right?
Sure.
So there's no, no give to squeeze and get a good grip for the quarterback. And He said, so I asked him to warm, you know, be sure those balls are warm. And he said, and by the way, we didn't deflate them. So it's going to be a hell of a weekend for football. I mean, I'm interested to see how it all goes. But anyway, that's not what we're here for, is it?
No, but it does mark the whole thing that this 2016 has started off kind of crazy. We went from warm weather to really cold weather. We've had so much, we got a lot going on this weekend with the NFL playoffs and these games and minus 30 degrees possibly in Minnesota, and such a newsworthy week in the world of pro wrestling. And we'll get into the whole raid, if you will, of New Japan's upper mid-card and main event scene by WWE here momentarily. But first, we'll talk just a little bit about the match you had a chance to see at the Tokyo Dome, because it's relevant to this defection of the New Japan Four, if you will. Shinsuke Nakamura, AJ Styles, Doc Gallows, and Karl Anderson, all rumored to be heading to WWE. And I know the opportunity to see Nakamura versus Styles, and that was the one I sort of put a priority on when I asked you to take a look at some things, because Nakamura is the one guy that I'm not sure you've seen a whole lot of, at least in the last couple of years. So I was just curious to get your take on him, because he's the one Japanese guy, because the other three, I'm sure, and I know you are very familiar with.
Yeah, well, you know, as I told you before we started recording, after watching this match, I'm a bigger fan of Tanahashi than a Nakamura. Not that I'm saying one is 180 degrees better than the other or anything like that. It's just a little, you're looking for the whole package, and and obviously everyone doesn't have the entire package. With this guy, his physique is the first thing that I'm not too excited about. The match itself, as I told you before we started, I love the pacing. I mean, they told you a story, and they told it at a pace that was allowed you to digest and stop and actually think about some things yourself, you know. And as this thing built, one of the things that should have been noticeable for a lot of people, they threw forearms, no punches. Now, I don't know if the booker there or the company's policy is. I know a couple of the little indie promoters in this country, a couple that I've worked with, say, listen, you throw forearms, you don't throw punches, because if I punch you in the face twice, you're going to be bruised, you're going to be bloody, blah, blah, blah. So it's just, you know, it makes it more realistic, and it does, you know. But the only thing that I would have changed, maybe, as I mentioned to you, is to have one of these guys early on like run a couple spots off a particular hold. Like Nakamura went back to the arm bar for the submission a couple times, but there was like maybe a 5 or 10 minute gap in between, which is not, I mean, here again, please understand, for those of you listening, I'm a perfectionist to a certain degree, and so it's not that I think this wasn't, it was a hell of a match. But there's always ways, I think, I always looked at my own work that way, you know. Okay, this was good, but how could I have made it better, you know. The one thing I noticed, AJ is leaner than I've seen him in years. But I enjoyed the match. I enjoyed it tremendously. And as I said to you, a lot of the WWE guys, or a lot of the guys in this country, period, should watch this, because nobody jumped up and had sparks shooting out of their butt to make a comeback after they'd been in the ring 20 minutes and had their ass handed to them. It was a beautiful story. The pacing, I think, was the most relevant and important thing, because, you know, you were able to follow it. And then, of course, I don't understand a thing about, you know, a word of Japanese. But the emotion from the announcers and listening to the crowd in the background. And as I said to you, this tape, as far as the pacing, the selling, should be a match that everybody learning this business should watch, and it should be a match that a lot of the guys in WWE should be forced to watch. They kicked out of finishes, but they didn't jump right back up, run around the ring 14 times at 100 miles an hour, and throw 15 drop kicks, you know. In other words, as the time drew on, they, you showed their how it was wearing them down, which is part of the story too. But I thought it was good. I thought it was very, very, very good. You know, I hate to be negative. Well, no, I don't hate to be negative. Not when it when it's honesty. When I first heard about Gallo and Carl and AJ and Nakamura, my first thought was, okay, how will they neuter these guys? You know, how will they bring them down? You know, Dave, you mentioned as well, AJ's got that tattoo, which would be hard. You can change his name to Alice Jones, I guess, or Abner Johnson. But, you know, to change any of these guys' names is frigging insane because they're all well-known within the wrestling fans because of the Internet, because. But I don't, you know, people can know what they're going to call them. They need to call them because that will help draw their fans to your show. Crazy enough, they're all valuable. You know, Carl started with me, as you know, he is a friend. We have lunch every once in a while. He can add a lot to that company if they allow him, if they allow these guys to bring to the table what they're presenting in Japan and not try to change them, you know? As I said to you, I look at this like the ostrich with the head in the sand. You change their name, everybody will just wink and say, okay, you know, it's of no, they're more valuable to you as Nakamura, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, and AJ Styles than they'll ever be to you as Bill Jones, Charlie Johnson, or whatever. You know, and don't give them goofy gimmicks. Let them wrestle. I hope it works out for them. I really do. As we both know, politics play too big of a part in this industry and much too big of a part in WWE. So I hope that doesn't come into play or that they have to bring these guys down. And that's the other thing, too. These guys don't need to go to NXT. That's insane, you know. I don't see the value in that, but I wish them all well. You know, AJ was at the first time that WWE offered him a contract was when he had came to a tryout camp here with Dr. Tom and I back in, I guess that was 2001 or 2, I don't remember exactly. And so he'd been offered, you know, way back then a deal, and at the time he was able to make more money by not going into developmental because he had his family to take care of. And in terms of AJ, let me mention, I know it was out on the internet, Vince Russo said that AJ probably wouldn't work in WWE or wouldn't fit the whatever. I forget the exact verbiage. And I happened to read a little blurb that somebody had posted of some of the things that Russo had said. And if I never ever have agreed with Vince Russo, and if I never ever agree with him again, he's got a point. AJ is a great family man. He's a class guy. He's good people. He's a hard worker. And, you know, the politics thing, could be a problem. It's been a problem with other people, you know, and it's a problem with a lot of people that are there now. They're looking over their shoulders. We hear this all the time. It's not that I'm, you know, talking out of school, but that, like I say, Russo's got a point. But, you know, this is about support, you know, it says supporting your family, and that's what he's absolutely trying to do. So,
I think we just get these four guys, the common thread in terms of that and how they're going to get along and whether or not they can navigate the waters is that they're all, either with the exception of Gallows, who's in his early 30s, the other three are in their mid to late 30s. And it's, you know, I don't want to say it's time to start making money now because that would, you know, I'm not trying to disparage what they were making, but this is the place to make the most money you possibly can for as long as you can.
Sure.
And at their ages, you know, it would behoove all of them to do whatever it is that they need to do if that's what they want to do.
Sure.
To, I don't want to say go along to get along, but this is where you're going to make the most money. And so this is the time, you know, from physically speaking and you know, condition of their health, respectively, in this business, where you want to do whatever it is that you have to do, if that's what you're willing to do, to make the most money in this company for as long as you can.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, I think, and again, and knowing Carl, You know, he's married to a Japanese girl. They have three beautiful children. Just the youngest one, I think, is just a little over a year old at this point, not much. But, of course, she'll have him home probably, you know, a couple days a week now, every week, where before, you know, he's in and out. I mean, his schedule is, I know, trying to set up a lunch date. You know, where are you now? Okay, I'm in Tokyo. No, you're in Cincinnati. Well, you know, that sort of thing. So, as for their families, I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's a positive move in terms of family relationships, and I hope it is financially for them as well. They all bring something to the table that is of value. My thought process is, are you going to try to change everything? You know, that's not necessary. To change what they do or who they are. I saw somewhere, somebody said, well, they call them the Bullet Club. Of course not. I'm sure that belongs to, New Japan.
But it does.
Lord knows WWE doesn't need another frigging faction. They have 9,881 factions now, and none of them are worth a damn.
So, well, they could use one that's actually over.
Well, that would, yeah, there's a point. You do make a point there, Vic. But I just, you know, for theirs, you know, and it's, like I said to you when we first started talking about this, you know, hate to think that the first thought when I heard that these four guys were going there is my first thought is, how are they going to hurt them? And, you know, I feel bad about it, but, you know, they do neuter talent. It's for some crazy reason. I don't know why. But speaking of rating, I saw on Facebook or something. I didn't read the interview or the news clip or whatever it was, but I guess Dixie Carter now is saying they're rating TNA, and if they are, at least get Bobby Roode and James Storm, I guess, going back to TNA, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Apparently signed a 2-year deal.
Well, you know, I saw a little clip where he said, well, you know, it's about taking care of your family, and they had the better offer. And again, you know, that's the thing where I know Storm worked some matches in NXT. Were they wanting him to stay there? You know, I mean, listen, you know, you try to work around egos, but pride is pride. If you've been a top guy, you know, and especially today, years and years ago, I could work on top of this territory, work mid-card in another territory, work underneath in a third territory, but those shows didn't overlap, so you weren't typecast, as it were, you know. So, but today, you know, if you're seeing a guy who's a hot commodity here, and then you bring him someplace else and start beating him just to prove a point that we can, you're not helping him at all. You're not.
See, to me, that's why it's almost, in a way, why it behooves WWE to treat these four who are coming in as well as you possibly can, especially at the start, because we've all seen everyone on that roster who we all know is immensely talented, but we've also seen them become typecast as guys who always lose. So if you bring these four guys in and just present them as somebody who don't lose, four guys who don't lose all the time, they'll immediately be different and therefore have more value.
Right. Yes, you're absolutely right. Excuse me. But yeah, and I, like I say, I wish them all well. I obviously don't know Nakamura, but I do know Carl and Luke and AJ, and they're all good guys. And of course, Luke's been there before, so he kind of knows how to navigate the political waters. I'm not sure why they let him go to begin with. You know, I'm sure it's the famous "We have nothing for you."
Right.
My answer to that used to be with you know, like when they some of the kids that I had in developmental, how about using them as a wrestler? There's a clever idea.
Mm.
You know, we overthink this now. I mean, completely. Everybody has to have a gimmick, a hand signal, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I'll tell you the one thing that I fast forward through in the New Japan is the friggin' ring entrances. You know, I it's great. I mean, if you're sitting there live and you know, getting caught up in the thing, but I'm thinking, do I need to see AJ walk that quarter mile, you know.
It's a long walk, yes, at the Dome.
Yeah. But, you know, the other thing about that particular match, too, the way they came, the seconds came in at the end, and I noticed one guy was putting ice on AJ's neck, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, that is, those points, I think, are, they add something. I don't think anybody's going to go home saying, hey, they put ice on AJ's neck. But these are the little visuals that make it, that solidify believability, I think. You know, it's when we did the tournament with the time limit in L.A., you know, the idea was ring seconds, right? The referee, nobody calls the guys in the middle of the ring anymore. We had the referee do that, which kind of parallels what the only thing MMA does that today. But, you know, they have the seconds with the water bucket and the towel and you know, that sort of thing. It's I think the little things tie the big things together. So that's that I like, too. And, you know, the little details that the Japanese people go to.
So is it safe to say that you would, well, obviously it's safe to say you said you'd debut all four of them on the main roster. Safe to say that Gallows and Anderson would immediately walk into the tag team title picture and Nakamura and Styles would be at the main event level?
I don't know necessarily. You know, I think it's all right to build them a little bit when you bring them in. I mean, not necessarily, you know, this guy challenging for a major title or anything initially, but I believe that you bring them in strong and give them a good solid win. You know, the crazy thing is, Carl and Luke could, I watch WWE's tag team division and think, wow, it'd be a nice place to have a tag team division. Why don't they? It's a dance contest. And now we got to have 6-man, 9-man, 20-man, as Brian mentioned the other day, 16-man tag matches. It's only good when it's fresh, and if you're doing it all the time, it's not fresh, and you're putting the same teams together over and over on Monday night. It's just, I don't know. They're doing it their way, and since they're the only game in town, basically, or at least in terms of national recognition, or a larger part of the national recognition, I guess they can do it any way they want. But I just see more value. Well, I can see this. I could see the Dudleys and Carl and Luke having a hell of a match. And, the you know, maybe the other kids, too. But it's just they've turned them into, you know, the other night I felt kind of bad. I don't know one Uso from the other Uso. But the one, it was in the ring, and he said, Uso, and nobody said, oh. And he said, Uso again, and nobody said, oh. And I thought, okay. You know, there's the value of catchphrases, isn't it?
Well, it's the value of catchphrases when everybody's 50-50.
Yeah, that's, you know, that thing, we talked about that. My God, you know, there have been a list of how many times the champions have been beaten. And
yeah, you know what, let me set that up before you get into that. There's a note in the Observer this week, which is, by the way, already available on the front page if you'd like to take a look at it. Just highlighting the sort of this 50-50 booking stats that are so often discussed, and it's been such a big talking point, and it's a good reason for it, because some stats were dug up on what happened on WWE TV this year with respect to that whole 50-50 philosophy. World champions did 12 jobs on WWE TV last year, 9 of the 12 by Seth Rollins. Intercontinental champions, 14 jobs on TV in 2015. 8 by King Barrett, you wonder why he's going nowhere, and 3 by Kevin Owens. U.S. champions did 8 jobs on TV. Rollins did 3 of those, and he only had the belt, I don't even think, 6 weeks. Tag champs, 21 jobs on TV, 10 by The New Day, and you wonder why no one's reacting to anything they're doing now the last few weeks. And Divas champions did 9 jobs, 7 by Nikki, 2 by Charlotte, who hasn't had the belt 3 months yet either.
Yeah, it's, that just makes no sense. Again, you know, here again, we're talking about a different time and a different day. Years ago, you know, the champion didn't win, the world champion, the NWA world champion or junior heavyweight champ didn't always win, but he didn't lose either, you know, or at least maybe by disqualification or something like that. But it was in different towns on different televisions. This is national, right? So if you're if I see your world champion get his ass handed to him every Monday night on a stretch, then, you know, it loses a bit of its luster. And, well, you know, the crazy thing is, let's look at it in comparison with something else. Earlier I mentioned the Bengals-Pittsburgh. The interest in the playoffs this weekend is, you know, they give you so many sides of this. It's not that, well, these guys have got, they haven't won a football game in 3 weeks, but they're in the playoffs. You know, or Pittsburgh, well, here in Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, obviously, here's a team that's got 6 Super Bowls, and Cincinnati's been to 2 and has never won it, one. So obviously you're looking at Pittsburgh as a power anyway, but in this rivalry, which, you know, got, what, I forget how many tens of thousands of dollars of fines the last time these two teams met. But Pittsburgh holds a huge one-loss advantage. You know, so, and of course, Andy Dalton, the starting quarterback for the Bengals, is out with a broken thumb. He has been at practice this week, but he is not going to start. And so you've got a fresh quarterback, the kid from Alabama. So, you know, all these things to look at and think about and to make it more interesting, the reason I want to turn it on. And that's what our business isn't giving people, you know, any depth of thought, to make me, I can't wait to see this. Am I making sense?
Yeah, and part of the attraction of wanting to see this is not just the natural built-in storylines that these games have, but it's also the fact that you're not seeing two mediocre teams going at it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, well, you know, like Carolina, I kept thinking they're going to lose a game. Their schedule hasn't been that strong, but here they are, and it could end up, you know, possibly being them and the Cardinals in the Super Bowl, which at the first of the year, I don't know that anybody would have gone to the bank with that particular combination. But that also makes it, you know, fun to watch and interesting because you don't have it figured out on the front end. And I think that's the part that most people are missing in the wrestling industry is, if I kind of know what you're going to do before I watch it, then it takes my interest away.
Unfortunately, the thing that we have been trained to expect is that that no one is super over and everybody beats everybody, and there's nothing interesting or exciting about seeing guys trade wins and losses with no meaning behind it.
Well, you know, Dave made a point the other day about that. You know, how can I think you're super special when you're not? When you're not portrayed as that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much, they have, when I say use the word neutered, it kind of feels like that to me, you know? Like it's almost like we can line this whole roster up and you go out there and do a match, give them 5 minutes and the normal bullshit and go on. That's not productive for anybody, least of all the company.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason why these four guys coming in from New Japan is being met with such excitement around these parts, because it has new possibilities that you hope WWE will take advantage of by doing something different this time. But part of the reason that those possibilities and the addition of these four talents are all the more welcome and all the more needed at this time is the rash of injuries that have plagued the WWE roster in the last few months. So many guys, and a lot of them suffering shoulder injuries, which is kind of curious, and Dave wrote about that in the Observer this week as well. And John Cena underwent shoulder surgery earlier this week and is out a minimum, they say, of 6 months. Of course, it's John Cena, so you never really know, but he did in fact have surgery this week. And Dave noted about WWE's strength and conditioning program, or a little bit about this in the Observer as well, and I wanted to get your take on it, that a lot of their conditioning program these days is focused on Olympic lifting. A lot of overhead presses get involved in that thing, and perhaps, maybe not, who knows, is connected to the rash of shoulder injuries that are going on. And I wanted to get your take on it, because you not only wrestled for 20 years, you've been training guys to wrestle for 20-plus years, and you've also got extensive work as a personal trainer in the gym, so you've got a unique understanding of, A, the kind of training in the gym with the weights that is perhaps most beneficial to guys who want to be professional wrestlers or who are taking bumps 3, 4, 5 nights a week like they are in WWE, and the kind of weight work you would recommend for somebody who's going to be putting their body through that kind of stress on a 3 or 4 or 5 night a week basis.
Well, you know, yeah. And actually, Dave and I emailed back and forth this week on that, because I heard him talking about it, and I agree with him. You know, here's the deal. To build muscle, any muscle, it has to be overloaded, meaning you have to put more weight on it than it is accustomed to, so it has to respond by getting stronger and larger, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's just common sense. But here's another thing about, you know, football players can go in and do this because it's a shorter, what's a play last, 4 or 5 seconds or something? But,
sure.
Yeah, they're getting hit. They're getting hit hard, but they have a little protection. And obviously the concussion thing is all, you know, I mean, all that is, it's a vicious business and it's a tough business. But for a wrestler to go in there and put in and intentionally beat his body up with, and especially today, these guys are doing the dives over the top rope and through the ropes and some of the crazy, crazy bumps that they're taking. The last thing they need, if you're trying, I mentioned Nakamura's size, you know, this guy needs to get in the weight room. End of story. But here's the thing. You can keep muscle mass by lifting sanely, right? Train smart. I know this from working with a couple of professional bodybuilders, getting them ready, helping them get ready for contest. You know, I can't enter this contest if I've torn a bicep or a pec or if I, you know, if I've got an injury because, you know, I can't pose, I can't do my routine, and I can't continue to lift if I'm injured. So guess what? They train, the word heavy is, you know, what's the relevance? What I'm saying is forget singles. I saw a picture of Cena with the big weight, you know, the big squats. Stop it. You don't need that. Now, you've got size. You can maintain that size with a proper diet, and you got to realize your body's getting some exercise in that ring as well. You know, so there's a rest. A lot of people don't understand. Your muscles don't gain size or strength in the gym. They gain that during the rest period. I mean, during, you know, it's like I don't train biceps every day or, you know, quads or whatever. It has to be a rest period in between and go back and hit. I hit everything twice a week or try to over a 6-day cycle. But past Monday, if I did back and buys on Monday, back and buys aren't going to get done again until Thursday because they need that rest. They're going to get some secondary work, obviously, from doing your other body parts. But, you know, to feature them, you don't do that as. And again, you don't need Olympic lifts. You're not in the Olympics. You don't need, you got to realize this is a work. I've told guys, too, sometimes, you got to look like you can bench 500, but nobody's going to put a bench in the ring and say, show me. You know? It's our business is about a look, a cosmetic thing. It's not, you know, I mean, obviously, Cesaro, you know, giant swinging Big Show is amazing. And here's a strong guy, but a lot of that is, I won't say natural strength, but, you know, your genetics come into play here, too. You know, you can take all the drugs that Mr. Olympia takes, and you can do the same lifts that Mr. Olympia takes, but if you don't have the genetics that Mr. Olympia has, you're not going to look like Mr. Olympia. So, you know, so all that testosterone and that macho thing, well, I've got to, you know, quit doing singles. Quit doing singles. You know, you don't need, you can use, you want to keep good quads, good hamstrings, use the machines, use a leg press. You don't have to do heavy squats. Yeah, the heavy squats hit the whole physique, I mean, the whole body, from the ankles up. I mean, you're going to feel this, you know, virtually everywhere. And it's a good mass builder. But you've got mass. What the hell are you trying to build? It's just a matter of maintaining it now. And, I agree with Dave. It should be more, not necessarily 30 reps to a set, but, you know, a little higher reps, good form, lift smart. And save your health.
So So without generalizing too much, you would say something more along the lines of lighter weight, more reps, and better form.
Yeah.
Would be the way to go in this thing, as opposed to heavy Olympic lifting and overhead presses and things of that nature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, because what pounding that your body's taking, how many times a week are you working? Four times, let's say, for example. You're wrestling four times a week, and your body's taking all these this abuse. So there's got to be a time when there's, you know, when it needs to you know, to rest and to recover. And again, you've got your size. I understand if you, well, again, with Nakamura, if you put him, if you're giving him to me, put him on a weight program, then I, obviously I, his diet is a huge part of that. But he's going to have to lift a little heavier than, say, John Cena, because Cena already has the look that you're trying to give to Nakamura. Now, you told me, and I had no idea, Nakamura had been to the States, put on a lot of size, what, 6-7 years ago,
yeah,
and then came back to Japan and lost it all. And as I said to you when you said that, I said, well, it's safe to say that he doesn't he may see gyms, but he doesn't spend any time in them currently. I mean, you know, which
not the gyms of the weightlifting variety anyway.
Yeah, yeah, he may go look at the girls doing aerobics or somebody, or he may be doing some cardio, you know, on a treadmill or something. But he's, and if he's lifting, he's sure, now talk about lifting light, he's lifting light, and he's probably not eating correctly either. But then he's probably got a metabolism of a racehorse, I'm guessing. He's pretty, how old is he?
He is 36.
Okay, so, yeah, so he's got a pretty good metabolism, I guess, to stay as lean as he is. And you know what? There's the thing. I don't have that kind of metabolism, and I can gain half a pound by getting downwind of a fatty meal. You know, that's just my genetic makeup. I want to hear people say, you know, I just can't seem to put on any size. I thought, oh my God, I wish I had your metabolism. It's just, in his instance, probably eating more times a day, the proper foods. But again, to me, I would like him to have a better look. Again, I'm splitting hairs here. He's a hell of a performer. He is. You know, one of the things that he did that AJ was like on his fours, and Nakamura was dropping in from, he was on the opposite side of the camera, so I couldn't see exactly, but he was using almost like Wrestling 2's knee lift.
Yes,
and he was coming down
knee,
and up.
Yes.
I thought, damn, that's pretty. I like that. They did some really nice stuff. They really did. But yeah, the weight training, you're not competing in Olympic lifts. You're not a powerlifting competitor. You don't need that. You know, if you're training your ego, stop it, because it's physically costing you in the long run.
So I don't know how familiar you are with this, but there's been a big thing. You know, it's become a real thing in the last few years. So I'm sure you do know it. But Rollins is a big practitioner of it. I believe Cesaro is as well. CrossFit. And it's the whole thing about being functional and doing all sorts of other different things. And there's a lot of Olympic lifting in that as well. But it's also, I think the program is kind of conditioned to build bodies that are more like Rollins and Cesaro, thick but lean, as opposed to Cena, who is just massive.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, there's several CrossFit gyms opened up around here now. When I was still doing personal training a few years ago, I remember seeing a guy come into our gym, and I come in it's early to work with a client, and I'm watching this guy, and I'm thinking, okay, excuse me, he's been in special forces, or he's been in something because of the way he was training. And
right.
When I had a chance to talk to him, I said, excuse me, were you in special? No, he says, I do CrossFit. And this is when I first started talking to him about, wow, this competition. I watched a little bit of it on ESPN. I see some value in some of that stuff, but then I also see, you know, there's, was it 60 Minutes or somebody a year or so ago did a story, and there's been a lot of injuries with that too. That's, what is it, the PX90, or is there something that infomercial?
Yeah, P90X.
Huh?
P90X, it's called.
P90X.
Yeah.
I've watched bits and pieces of that, and I see some value in some of it, but then some of the things, you got, you know, again, you've got to stop and look. This is about you as a person. What you see somebody else doing doesn't, you know, the old story, you go in the gym, you see the guy with the biggest biceps. Don't, you know, you doing what he's doing doesn't, it's not going to get necessarily going to give you big biceps. And there's a chance his mom and dad gave him those, you know. So everybody's different, and so how you train is not necessarily how I can train. And the cross, you know, I'm sure there's some value to that, but in moderation, because I've watched some of that. And again, you got to realize what we're talking. If you're just a CrossFit competitor, then if that's all you're doing, and you say you work as an insurance agent or you know, a job that's not physical in nature, otherwise, then fine, you know. But you got to realize professional wrestlers. This is, you know, football players play once, I mean, they run practices, they play once a week. You're going four times a week, and you're going to the weight room, and you're beating your body up in the ring, and you're beating it up in the weight room. At some point, you're going to pay for that. It's just, I mean, that's human nature.
You were mentioning squats and how real heavy squats aren't probably necessary if this is what you're going to be doing for a living anymore. Are there two or three specific exercises, and I'm asking you to generalize a little bit, but two or three things you would tell wrestlers there's no need to ever do, or two or three things that there are things that they should always be doing?
Well, you know, I think, again, once you gain size, one of the things, you know, I haven't done a deadlift in years. I don't do squat. I haven't done squat. I don't need that. I'm 75 years old, right? And here's the other thing, you know, using free weights, the one thing that free weights do that machines do not do is work your stabilizers. As I'm sure you're aware, if, you know, you're doing a heavier, say you're on a selector stack machine and you're doing X number of pounds on the chest press, let's say. And now there's a chance you're not going to be able to balance or handle that on a free bench. Why? Well, because of your stabilizers. But here's the thing. Once you've established size, I don't care if it's a selector stack machine or free weights, your muscles aren't smart enough to know which one you're using. I know I've had kids say, yeah, well, you got to do free weights to me, but not necessarily. You know, as long as you overload that muscle group, the muscle group's not smart enough to say, well, I'm rejecting this workout because you're not using free weights. It's not macho. But yet, that's the way some guys think. John, you know, John obviously is a gym rat. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm a gym rat. I'm not saying that in a disrespectful way. It's great that he can squat 600 pounds for however many reps. I have no idea, you know. But now it's costing him, and it's also costing his company. So, you know, it's moderation. I think for these guys, I'm sure that they're lifting trainers. Your weight the guys who are in charge down there probably are very talented. They have degrees running out their ears and all that. But this is, you know, wrestling business is its own world. I mean, it's not like anything else. Our business, you can't compare it to something else. I've seen pro football players who were. I remember Wahoo when he started the business saying, "Jesus, this is and here's one of the toughest SOBs I've ever met in my life." You know, and yet the transition from football to wrestling, it opened his eyes. Whoa, you know, and that's not to say that we're tougher than football. That's not even the point, you know, but it's a whole different element. It's a whole different world, and it needs to be treated as such. So you can give me, well, have you ever lifted on hammer strength?
I have.
Great equipment, is it not?
It is, yes.
All right. Kim Wood, who was strength coach for the Bengals, is a friend of mine. Kim, well, he's a friend of Dave's as well. He was one of the designers. He, along with Peter Jones, Arthur Jones, who designed Nautilus, Arthur's son, Peter, they're the guys who invented or designed all the hammer strength equipment. And it was based here in Cincinnati till they sold out to the big corporation. In fact, they had a showroom down off of Gilbert Avenue here. And but I think, you know, Kim would tell you the same thing. You know, you got to lift a certain way to get your size, but then you can maintain that size without, you know, pushing your limits and testing yourself. And I'd be curious, you know, I haven't talked to Kim in a long time. I don't think Dave has either. I'd be curious to see what he thinks about this. And I know he's into powerlifting and stuff like that too. But now I'll tell you this, I'll tell you this. He brought a couple of the Bengals out to my place one afternoon to watch us train. And this was when I was when I had the developmental. And I talked to him later, and he said those. He kind of laughed. He said those football players said, "Jesus, these guys work harder than we do."
Hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that was two NFL players saying it. Wasn't like, you know, I'm making this up, or Kim was just blowing smoke, but that, you know, that's what he said. He said when they left, they were saying, wow, these guys were, you know, and of course, you know, it's different. You train, weight train different ways for different things. You know, if you're a golfer, you can improve your golf game with weight training, but it won't be by squatting 600 pounds. You know, that comes in across your back, your shoulders, your, and so forth and so on. It's, you know, it's sports specific, you know, opposed to just one type of weight training fits everybody.
So when you were running HWA, what did that schedule look like for the guys, and especially the guys who were working shows on a regular basis, between shows, practices in the ring where they were bumping, and how many days were they in the gym lifting weights
week? Now, some of my guys, you know, I used to be a trainer for John Perillo Performance. That's where I worked with Linda Murray and Ron Love, pro bodybuilders, and Sharon Bruneau and several others. Some of the guys went over to John's. And Franco Santoriello, who was a pro bodybuilder at one point, was living in Cincinnati and one of John's trainers at the time. And I know some of the guys are laughing because he was kicking their butt. But John, that's here's a brilliant man with nutrition and supplementation and training as well. But John has worked with MMA fighters. He has worked with wrestlers. He has worked with football players. He's worked with golfers. I mean, and there is no particular routine that fits all these people, you know. But here we train developmental. We started at noon usually, and went for about 3 hours. A lot of it was you've seen the drills that I run. You know, it was calisthenics to warm up, then drills, run some practice matches, that sort of thing. You know, and the weight we had weights in our facility, but then there were some of the guys went to other gyms. Like I say, some of them went over to John's. And we had a show. We wrestled on Tuesday nights. We had an in-house show on Tuesday. So Tuesday practice, we called it Bumpless Tuesday because we did promos. We practiced interviews and promos because we had a show that night. So the guys were virtually in the ring almost every day. Fridays, now, we did our TV in Louisville on Sunday. We had shows Saturday night. And sometimes on Friday, but we didn't. Friday was our day off. We trained or had a show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday was a day off, and then we did a show Saturday night. And almost every, I guess they didn't renew the contract. I think, as I recall, we were doing like 16 shows a month, and including our television, and. Training Wednesday and Thursday in ring. But again, I'm going to tell you one of the things. This is about me. I can't speak for every other trainer. I can't speak for anybody else. But I always looked at injuries that, you know, how you feel better. I can't feel a thing, you know. And short of somebody dogging it, and I could tell they were dogging it, I never, you know, it's a, should I train? You tell me. Should you train? Are you capable of training properly? Or if I saw that you were coming up lame, or you couldn't quite, what's the problem? Well, you know, this is about, okay, sit out. Your body is your living in this business, and you need to protect it and take care of it.
Going to open up the mailbag here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. So we are now headed down into the home stretch. You can always tweet your questions to me at VS1067. You can also put them in the thread to this very show so we can do them next week. You can also email me, VictorSosa@WrestlingObserver.com. Just make sure you put mailbag in the subject line. I held over a couple last week, Les, that we're going to tackle first. And first we get a prediction from Patrick, who wishes us both a happy new year. He says, gosh, I hope he's wrong about this, but I predict that WWE will panic due to poor ticket sales for WrestleMania and bring back Hulk Hogan for some kind of appearance, as well as put an NXT title match in a prominent position.
Well, you know what? Putting an NXT title match in a prominent position wouldn't be a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. I don't look at WrestleMania as a show of main events. It's because it's not that. But having more, you know, having several key matches is only helpful. And so having an NXT title match, I don't see that as being a problem at all. Will they panic and bring Hogan back? Gosh, I don't. They may panic, but I don't know that they'll bring Hogan back. But going into the Dallas football stadium with all, you know, injuries and this and that, and Cena, you know, being out and everything. Wow, it's will they lose money? Absolutely not. You know, I mean, this show, WrestleMania, is kind of like the Super Bowl. I'm not the biggest fan in the world, but it's an event, it's a happening, and I want to go just to say I was there. So, you know, I think they'll do okay down there. But I think this will hurt, you know. Maybe instead of 18 million gross, they'll only gross 17 and a half or something like that. Vince may be out buying tickets on Powerball, I don't know.
Oh my goodness. Wait, you know what? I'm gonna knock him over in line if I see him. Give me $700 million. I'm there, brother. He's not getting a ticket before me.
You know, somebody said the other day that if you took the cash payout, you'd only get $200 million.
Wait, you know what? I gotta be honest with you though. I know what you're saying, and I'll gladly take the $200 million, but I gotta be honest, that offends me. The idea that it's going to be $700 million and then the cash payout and then taxes on top of that.
Yeah.
How does the government still get that much money off of my – that does bother me. I can't even lie.
Oh, me too. I agree with you 100%. It does nothing for me either. But I'm thinking, okay, what part of $200 million can't I use?
Right? You're right.
Hell, I could make – you know, realize I could make a millionaire out of every member of my family and still have – more than $100 million to myself. I mean, Jesus. Yeah, it's horrible. You know, I have some friends that'll, you know, they'll buy tickets on these, and my dad years ago used to buy $2 every week on the Ohio lottery. I don't know if he ever won a dime, to be honest with you. It was just something he did. But you know, when you hear somebody say, well, it's only $100 million, or it's only $60 million, wow, you don't need that? You can't use that?
Yeah.
okay. Whatever.
I had a coworker at the radio station a couple days ago on the last drawing when it was $450 or so. I said to her, are you going to do that tonight? She says, it's $450. I'm like, what?
Yeah, okay. And you make what, $20 an hour or something? Or $15 or whatever the hell it is. Yeah, it's... wow. You know, I don't do lotteries for the most part, but I think I'll go down today and buy a couple tickets. Just, and so, as you know, when I see people buying $50 and $100 or $200, and I guess these groups that go out and win, that's cool because they can, you know, only one ticket's going to win. So you only, and, you know, I saw on Good Morning America, 70% of the winners are the machine picking the numbers.
Yes, that's true.
So, you know, using your daughter's birthday and your anniversary and all that sort of stuff maybe is not, you know, I've always let the machine, what do you call it, auto lotto, just let the machine pick for me. At first when I tried it, you know, my birthday, my wife's birthday, blah, 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 you know, this or that. But, yeah, I just let the machine pick it. But, yeah, I don't normally do the lottery, but I think I'll buy a couple today.
Yeah, I know. I let the machine pick it all the time. On the rare occasions that I do the daily number, the 3 or 4 digit thing.
Yeah.
I'll do birthdays or anniversaries or things like that. But for the lottery thing, I always let the machine do it. That's just too much. It's too much work. But, because you start thinking about those same things and you get into the habit of playing those same numbers all the time. And it's like, you know what? The machine doesn't do it that way.
Right.
So.
I got you. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, if you see Vince in line, shoot him or something, right?
I'm knocking his ass over, I'm telling you right now.
I heard that.
All right, Antonio says, does Les see Roman Reigns leading WWE to heighten business in 2016, or will business remain the same? I predict NXT will be expanded. They get their seasoned talent plucked, like NXT champion Finn Balor, Apollo Crews, and Sami Zayn, and they all fail on the main roster due to Vince having to prove he's the only one who has an eye for talent.
You know what? Antonio may not be totally wrong about that. You know, here's the thing. Will Roman lead WWE to heighten business? Nobody, let me say that, emphasize that again, nobody will lead WWE or TNA or Ring of Honor or anybody else to heighten business unless they are used properly. Realize, I honestly believe this, if Steve Austin came back today, he wouldn't be over the way he was when Stone Cold first appeared on the scene, because they're doing their business. Well, it gets back to the even booking thing, right? Plus, it's a different time, but I think Roman is starting to get over. And, I think him knocking Vince on his ass has done more for him than wrestling Lesnar or anybody or doing anything else, you know. But it's not about Roman. It's about how he's utilized. And that comes down to everybody. So it just depends, you know. They're going to bring guys up from NXT. And... will they fail? Let me ask you this. Is Kevin Owens, you think, as strong in a casual fan's eyes today as he was when he beat Cena the first time you ever saw him?
Absolutely not.
No. And when you send Bo Leave and that group, you've got a new faction. Collectively, talk about lost matches. That foursome has probably lost 150 matches in the last 6 months, right?
Mm.
And yet they're out. You know, it's just... Now, if we're talking about panic, I think trying to repackage these guys in this situation is panic. Or it's just, we need to do something different, or do something. So now we're doing the faction thing. Do you remember when we had the motorcycle gang and Luck Week was?
Oh, God, we had the Disciples of Apocalypse, Los Boricuas, The Nation.
Yeah, well, say the Spanish name again.
Boricuas.
Boricua, okay. ¿Cómo está? No, I don't. But if you remember, we had the Motorcycle Gang, we had the Nation of Domination, we had the Val and what did they call them? Stevie Richards, and they were the...
The Right to Censor.
Yeah, exactly. We had all these groups and rolled them all together, and now there's some very talented people in these groups. But roll them all together and tell me how much you remember about any of it, or did you give a damn?
You know what? When I think of all those groups, out of all the guys that you named, and as you mentioned, so many talented people, the only thing I think about was that The Rock came out of The Nation.
Yeah. Okay.
But, I mean, but the point is, out of all those people, I can only think of the only person that comes to mind. There's only one who comes to mind.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. So, you know, hey, it didn't work then. Let's do it again. I don't know. You know, this is a business. You'll realize that the NWO, the initial NWO, and I'm not talking about the expanded version with 49 people in it. The original NWO was strong. The Four Horsemen were strong. A lot of people have tried to duplicate these things. A lot of people have tried to imitate these things. A lot of people have tried to pull off the same thing. Name me two that have. Thank you. It's just, again, this comes back to how many, you know, I repeat myself all the time, and I know that. And one of the things I'm going to repeat myself about now is sometimes it's the right chemistry at the right time, and it's not even by your planning or your idea. It just happens. That's what happened with the Four Horsemen. Of course, you got to realize the Four Horsemen, the talent of those five people. I mean, physical talent collectively, verbal talent, their look, the whole nine yards. You haven't, I haven't seen anybody duplicate that in my life, or in the, since then. I shouldn't say in my life, but since then. And so now we're, you know, somebody came up, well, let's do factions, and okay. But it's not, it doesn't mean anything. That's the problem. And like I said, the whole, you know, when I heard one Uso say Us and nobody said oh, and he said it again, I'm thinking his heart must have dropped a little bit, but it's hokey and it's not that important. The physical thing, as my dear friend Rip Rogers says, and probably a lot more vulgar than I'll say it now, is, you know, you can have the greatest ring music in the history of the business. You can have the greatest costume. You can have the greatest gimmick. But when the friggin' bell rings, if you can't work, nobody gives a damn. So all this posturing and all this fluff, you know, if you don't book, it comes back to the question about Roman leading the company. You know, you can have great physical talent. If you don't use it properly, it doesn't matter. You and I can have the most powerful race car engine in the history of NASCAR. If we don't have a good suspension and a good driver, it doesn't matter. We're not going to win any races. So it's a combination of all these things that's necessary to make this work.
Les, with the string of WWE injuries, how will they regroup? And how would you figure in the new signings into the mix? Which we did kind of touch upon, but that's part of the mailbag. This is more of me hoping, he says. I really hope that WWE puts real money-drawing heat on somebody for a change.
So do I. That's the best answer I can give you. So do I. Well, you know, that's the thing. Kubal Carmichael on Facebook mentioned he was watching American Idol because I told him to. And, of course, you know, but there's a reason behind that. Is I watch The Voice as well, and I think all young performers should, and maybe some of the people writing this stuff in WWE and TNA should watch too. It comes down to connecting with the fans. I've watched the first two nights of American Idol auditions, and of course now the three judges are tremendously entertaining. Harry Connick is crazy, man. I love it. But anyway, there was one performer that came out to audition. And I don't remember male or female, but I remember the judge's critique was, you know, you've got a good voice, you know, you carry a tune well and all that, but you just mouth the words. We didn't feel anything. There's no emotion. Last night they had a little girl, it was very emotional too because her mom is a captain in the army. She was in Afghanistan. What the little girl didn't know is they had brought the mother home for the audition. But this little girl sat down at the piano, and she was 15 or 16 years old. She had soul running out of her ears, my friend. And you could, you know, Harry or Keith, somebody said, you know, some people are going to have to work hard to keep up with you. And or this young man who sat down at the piano and did one of the a song that he had written. And when you hear somebody say, "Well, I'm going to audition with one of my own songs," you're thinking, "Oh Christ!" You know, you're rolling your eyes. The song was good, but the guy touched them. That's the point, you know, and that's what's lacking in our business is actually, you know, tweaking the heartstrings or whatever the hell you want to call it of the viewer. And it's just, like they said to this person, you just mouth the words. I watch some of these matches, you're just going through the motions. And the difference between going through the motions and what we were talking about, Nakamura and AJ, the way that the close-up camera angles where they're selling, right? They're getting up slow. The fact that they had to come in with the ice pack. I mean, it's the visuals that are part of that emotion, right? And we're lacking that.
Sam wants to know, will WWE play it safe at WrestleMania or go outside the box and go against what everyone thinks will happen?
I would hope they go outside the box and go against everything that people would think will happen. That's why I watch TV. I jumped on The Blacklist, came back last night, and this damn show is so intriguing. James Spader is a hell of an actor. I mean, I loved him in Boston Legal. I love him in this. I mean, I don't care if he's being a comic or a heel or what the hell he's being. This guy is a hell of an actor. But I couldn't. They came back last night, and they misdirectioned us in that hour, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 times in an hour, where you thought, oh, my God, you know, and then they pulled the, you know, out of the fire or what. I mean, but the misdirection, that's what becomes entertaining, because I didn't know what was going to happen. I knew what I wanted to happen, but I, you know, and they made me, they took it, gave it to me, took it away from me. Took it, you know, and then teased me for giving it back and so forth. Why? Because that's the reason I have to tune in next week. That's the reason I couldn't wait for them to come back after the break through the holidays. You know, and that's what we're lacking in our business, Vic. It, you know, and I hate to keep saying it over and over, but it's true. It's true.
All right, our last question here comes from Michael, who wants to ask about some of the best ways to debut new talent, face or heel, that you have upper card aspirations for, Les. Any examples, excuse me, you can think of excellent rollouts from the past?
Well, you know, I think it's just the simplicity. We talk about this quite a bit, I think, over and over again, so I'm going to probably chew the same hash again a little bit. You know, it's make a first impressions are extremely important, which doesn't always necessarily mean that has to be in ring, you know. It can be on a promo. It can be, you know, various ways. I've watched, you know, back in the territory days, one of the things I learned from Leo Garibaldi is he had Tim Woods, Mr. Wrestling, over in the Atlanta territory before he ever set foot in the state. Because he used pictures, he built a good story, put it in the weekly programs, they plugged it a little, Ed Capral plugged a little bit on, or Ed Capral been doing a TV at the time, it was Les Thatcher and Gordon Solie. I'm losing my mind here. Anyway, you know, you mentioned it on TV and this and that and the other thing, you've got to give substance. It's got to have substance. And if you're going to bring a guy in and put him over strong in the first night, you don't, if he's going to beat one of your top guys, then he's got, where do you go from there? I think we all of us of the age of consent anyway, understand what foreplay means. And that's what, again, that's what's lacking in this business too, I think, to a great degree, is foreplay, is to build and, to build the excitement, to make people want to see, watch a guy grow. You know, this is so subtle, and when I tell this story mentioning Leo Garibaldi, it came to mind. Doug Gilbert, not Tommy Gilbert and Eddie Gilbert's son and brother, but Doug Lindsay, who just passed away a year or so ago now, too. He came in as the pro under a mask. And the way Leo built him into a, he made him a tweener on purpose, to a certain degree, because then he could go either way with him. But when he started, the deal was the pro, they call him the pro because of his technical wrestling expertise. And so, like, for example, he comes in the first night and he beats a preliminary wrestler, but it's strictly all wrestling. And then as he works his way up the card, maybe he gets with a mid-card guy who has given him more than anybody's given him thus far, and he throws that first forearm. He's never been thrown a punch or a forearm before. But my point is, I'm getting out, I'm going to wear you out with trying to tell an elongated story here. But the point is, as he gets higher on the card, he takes some more shortcuts. But you're watching this develop. And you're wondering, you know, it makes you wonder. Okay, well, he had to do this with this mid-card guy. What happens when he gets to this guy who's above that guy? So it gives you, makes you want to see. And I don't know that has there been any want to see wrestling that I've missed on television, covering every company known to mankind in this country?
Not on American television.
Thank you. Then that's pretty, you know, but you know, you build, you take time. It's like, if you read, I love reading good mystery novels, you know, James Patterson, James Lee Burke, Lee Child, people like that. But, you know, those books, if you buy them a paperback run, I don't know, it's 400 pages, 350 pages, whatever, they give you a reason to keep reading. They give you a reason to continue on. And they don't, they establish the character on the front end. They establish their characters on the front end. They establish the story, and then it expands and grows. And the simple answer is that that's the way you should, you know, if you're pushing a guy to the top. I mean, there's always a, you know, I remember when we brought Stomper in, to Southeastern into Knoxville. He opened, we had a big New Year's, I think it was New Year's or Christmas, I don't remember, Battle Royal. And he had made no appearances with us up to that time. We had shown some pictures of him and talked about him. And he was a juggernaut in this Battle Royal. He cleaned the ring out and ended up winning the Battle Royal. We established Archie on the front end. But then from that point forward, you had to push him. You couldn't have him, you know, looking at the lights with every Tom, Dick, and Harry that was in the promotion, you know. But, you know, I can say it depends on the character. It depends on what you need at the time. There's no, you know, standard issue pattern to follow. But the point is, you know, if you're pushing a guy to the top, the last thing you want him is to drop in matches to guys underneath. And you want to establish, you know, to a long future for this guy. So don't do everything at once.
Les, we're getting ready to wrap up this week's show, but before we do that, I want to give you a chance to let everybody know where they can get a hold of you, whether or not they're trying to book you for some training camps. Maybe if you're an aspiring wrestler, and I correct me if you're wrong, I think you still give these out, right? If someone's looking for dietary advice or training program or thing of that nature, you still have some of those one sheets that you give out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, somebody that listens to our show had sent me an email about that, I think. A month or so ago, and I emailed him out. Yeah, it's a it's a guidelines for gaining or losing weight. It's not an end all be all. It's just a guide. I mean, you know, but yeah, I'm willing to do that. You can reach me at les@epwt.com or lesthatcher@zoomtown.com, and I'm always looking for bookings. I can do a 1-day seminar. I prefer weekends because it just you get more done by doing a complete weekend and. You know, I know I'm going to New Orleans for Luke Hawks when we finally put a date together. I've been talking to the new owners at they're not calling it Anarchy anymore in Cornelia, Georgia, about doing something down there with them. I know I'm going to do something with Q-Ball Carmichael in North Carolina at some point this year, and I hope to. Obviously, we're going to be in Charlotte. Rip Rogers, Les Thatcher, Lance Storm, Nigel McGuinness, Tom Pritchard, blah, 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 in August. And hope to, you know, return to work with my dear friend Danny Cage at the Monster Factory. And, you know, but, yeah, give me a shout or email me, and I'll be more than happy to fill you in on the requirements and what we do and look forward to working with a lot of people.
All right, so we're going to put a cap on this week's edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. I'm not even going to ask because I know you're going to the gym. I'm defeated.
You I bet your butt I am, and you are too, right?
Yeah, I am. That's
true. Okay. today for me is I'm going to probably do, depending on how my knees feel, 20 to 30 minutes on the recumbent bike, and then today is Friday. It's chest and tries and abs. Today.
All right. Sounds pretty good. I'm not actually sure what I'm going to do today because I'm going to get up a little early tomorrow and take a couple of the classes. You know, they've got the TRX straps in the gym that I go to, and they do class on Saturday morning, and I really like that. I used to do that a few years ago pretty regularly, and
cool.
I went back and did them last Saturday for the first time in a while, and I think I'm going to start trying to make that class. So I'm just sort of maybe just a little more cardio than anything else today, and then get in there and do that class tomorrow.
Have you ever had a chance to work on Kaiser equipment?
I have not.
Kaiser is air equipment, right?
Mm.
And it's my gym here, Miami Athletic Club, has a complete circuit of Kaiser. And it is, I mean, now I use other equipment too. I mean, but the cool thing about the air is, like, let's say, for example, you're doing dips, you know, for triceps. You're sitting on the dip machine. One hand has a button to increase the air pressure. The other hand has a button to decrease it. What I like about those machines, I can do drop sets or strip sets, whatever you want to call them, right, and start whatever air, you know, I mean, it shows numbers just like, you know, with weights. But let's say, you know, whatever, let's say I start at 100 pounds, you know, or 100 on the meter. And when I get to that last rep that I can force out, that I hit the button that lets some air out and keep going. And then, you know, get three or four more reps, let some more out, go again. So you're basically taking the muscle past its limits, you know, in theory. And it's great equipment. It's really nice. They've got a circuit down here for it. If you ever get a chance, try it.
It's called Kaiser?
Kaiser, yes.
All right. I'm going to check that out.
With K. Kaiser with a K, yep. Like Kaiser.
Well, now I've got some homework this weekend.
Yeah.
So I'll be checking that out. I'll be Googling Kaiser. I'll be buying my lottery tickets and elbowing Vince out of the way, and I'll be watching some playoff football. So.
Me too. Only I won't be pushing Vince out of the way. He won't show up here to buy his ticket, damn it.
Well, listen, if he does and you do, you should push him as hard as you can, not because you want to hurt him, but his wallet may fall out of his pocket.
I tell you, old Vince with the sleeves cut out of his referee shirt looks pretty damn good, doesn't he?
Well, you may want to push him with a sharp, blunt object in your hand.
Yeah.
How about that?
You know, that's something when I was with I had said to him several times, I said, I look, you know, maybe we get a chance to train together at some point. And we never, of course, never did, but I'd always thought that would be fun to train with Vince just to see, you know, how intense he really was.
That's a vignette I'd actually would like to see on WWE TV.
At this point, you see two old guys. It probably wouldn't be real pretty, but anyway.
So we're going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. He is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend it with us, and we'll talk to you again next week.